from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're hanging out with you until noon, and we'll give way to D'Lo and KC coming up in about 10 minutes. Faraz Siddiqui of Upper Hand Fantasy. That is an Odyssey original podcast. You can find that on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Terrific stuff from him on the fantasy football side. Not talking draft or anything, just kind of trying to get a lay of the land after an insane NFL free agency period where running backs are moving teams and you can see receivers moving teams and there's new quarterbacks. Kirk Cousins, what does that mean for all the Falcons dudes who we've been waiting on? Bijan Robinson, Drake London, Kyle Pitts. We will dive into that with him coming up in about 10 minutes. That should be a really fun discussion, as it always is, with Faraz. The Sacramento Kings are in Toronto tonight, taking on the Raptors. And, James, we've talked about it a lot. This is one of those instances where you go into it going, all right, it's a game the Kings should probably win by a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't do that because we saw what happened against Memphis, a bad team that was shorthanded.
Yeah, I mean, it's something, it's who you are, right? So Scottie Barnes, RJ Barrett, Chris Boucher, Jakob Poeltl, Emmanuel Quickley are all out for the Raptors. The tank is in. I do think that there is a little bit of an interesting twist here. The Kings haven't had a stretch where they've had multiple rotational players out of action mm-hmm. since early in the season when Trey Lyles and then De'Aaron Fox got hurt. So this is maybe the counteract thing. The formula for success for the Kings mm-hmm. is that they have Kevin Huerter out with a dislocated shoulder and Trey Lyles, of course, is out with an MCL sprain. Sasha Vezenkov has been upgraded to questionable after being out for over a month with a grade 3 ankle sprain.
That's so odd. Was that the first update that we've gotten on Sasha?
We haven't even really got an update outside of he just showed up on the injury report as questionable.
Huh.
Yeah.
Very strange.
So he was supposed to be reevaluated in 4 to 6 weeks, and I can't remember the exact date of the injury, but I want to say it's around February 19th or something.
Well, typically, and the reason I say this is odd is not some, you know, shenanigans or anything. Typically, though, is it not that there's a reevaluation in 4 to 6 weeks, then there's another release of, okay, he's been cleared for contact, he's been cleared to practice, he's going to return to X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, we have not been able, he's returned to competitive, no. So, yes, there is typically a point. Yeah, so, again, Sasha hasn't played since, it's February 9th. That's when he injured his ankle against Denver. And then it was during practice a couple of days later that he injured his ankle badly. So maybe a day later. It was between the 9th and, so they flew to OKC. I think they had a practice in Oklahoma, and he got injured at that practice and has been out since February 11th. So 4 to 6 weeks, we're right in that time frame. Yeah. So, I mean, that's...
No, it makes sense. I kept waiting on the... Okay, he's been cleared for contact. Okay, he's returning to practice. Okay, he's ramping up. Be reevaluated in a week. Hope to return this game.
No, I mean, we heard rumor that he practiced this weekend. And the only way I heard it is because some people were discussing, because they had coaches officiating, mm-hmm. and someone said, oh, yeah, you totally missed that foul, Sasha, you know, it mm-hmm. got me on the arm, and you totally missed that. I'm like, Sasha? Well, when did he start practicing again?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, this is a break from the norm, and I don't know, like, I don't want to get into it too deep, but
sure,
it is what it is.
Yeah, I was just surprised that he just showed up on the report is questionable. But hopefully, you know, back tonight.
Yeah,
Kings need him with Trey Lyles and Kevin Huerter both out. Let's get into some keys to victory for your Sacramento Kings tonight, James. What is your first key?
My first key is let Keon Ellis get comfortable. This could be a long term situation. We have no idea how long Kevin Huerter is out for because we haven't got an update on what exactly is going on with his shoulder outside of it being dislocated. This could be a situation where Keon Ellis, a young player, really needs to like settle in and become who he's going to be as a player. And if you can do that quickly, he might not ever let go of the rope here. This might be a, dare I say, Wally Pipps situation.
Yeah.
Somebody decides, unfortunately, to miss some time. And you go to someone else, and that someone else impacts winning in a different way.
I'm interested to see, one, how he, like you're saying here, responds to, hey, man, you're it.
Yeah.
This isn't, hey, you're starting tonight. You might start tomorrow, but also you might not. And we'll see. This is this is your job for the time being.
We need full tilt.
For the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
So that'll be an interesting response. And then, yeah, what if Huerter is out for 8 games... and the Kings go 7-1 with Keon Ellis in the starting lineup in those 8 games. Now they're 13-1 when he starts. Be interesting.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated. Number one for me, I'd like some urgency in this one. I'd like the Kings to play this game like they are clinging to the number 6 seed, trying to avoid the play-in tournament. That this can't be a lollygag out. Oh, first game on a road trip. We're in Toronto. Bad team. Oh, dang, we're down 3 at the end of the first quarter. Oh, it's tied at halftime. No. Just hit the gas early. And maybe Toronto hits a bunch of threes and they're in the game, but I don't want to see any lollygagging.
No, this is...
Show me the urgency.
This is a team that isn't very good, and you need to come out and you need to pop them.
Mm-hmm. Number two.
Number two for me is, of course, I've lost... Oh, reignite the offense. The Kings' offensive rating since the All-Star break is number 7 in the league, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen sort of, you know, with the officiating changing, they've mucked it up a little bit, and I'd like to see them like get out. 120 is a number. You score 120, you win if you're the Kings,
yep.
and I would like to see them push for that.
Yep. My number two is maintain physicality. We've talked about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The refs swallowing whistles. The Kings have responded well to that. I would like to see them continue that on the road, even against a lesser team. Go out and be the more physical team. Take it to them. You're probably going to be playing a bunch of guys who are getting big time opportunities for the first time or for just the first of or the first time or maybe one of their first few times getting a real opportunity to play NBA minutes. So you're going to have to match that. They're going to be going hard.
Yep.
Number three.
Put them to bed early. Kings have back to back tomorrow in Washington, and I don't think the Washington back-to-back is all that difficult because Washington is probably the worst team in the NBA.
They stink.
Yes, but leaving Toronto, going through customs, getting back stateside can be a grind.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a possibility you don't get in until 3 in the morning. Like, this is one of those games where if you can beat a team early and rest some of your starters, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it sure would be. I'm not buying that they will, but...
Yeah, me
could
too.
Could use it, for sure. Number three for me, it's Chris Duarte time.
Oh.
I think you're going to see a lot of Chris Duarte tonight, and I'm interested to see what extended Chris Duarte minutes look like in the whistle-less version of the league.
Yeah, I would also like to see Chris Duarte be able to play physical and not have the whistle blowing the whole time.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, if you give him an opportunity, I'm with you.
Yeah, so maybe we get a better version of Chris Duarte and one that the Kings were hoping they were getting when they signed him earlier this year, because I think he's the guy. He's the one who's going to see an uptick in minutes with no Trey Lyles, with no Kevin Huerter, Keon Ellis in the starting lineup. And whether Sasha Vezenkov is playing or not, I think you're going to see plenty of Chris Duarte. So it's Chris Duarte time. Those are your keys to a Kings victory. You're welcome.
There it is.
We're fired up. All right. Round two of the first four from Dayton is coming up. We've got 16 seeds Grambling and Montana State. Shout out to the Big Sky. And then we will have the 10 seeds Colorado against Boise State. The BetQL model, by the way, BetQL and Odyssey Company, they like Boise State plus the 3 points and the over 143.5 in that game. So that should be a fun one to tap into. Make sure you're listening here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento's sports leader.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Yeah, James Hamm, Kyle Madsen, and Faraz Siddiqui.
That's right.
Upper Hand Fantasy. He is with us every Friday during the NFL season. He does a great job as we break down the fantasy football angle of the NFL. But we were looking and we were talking free agency, and James went, yo, all this running back movement, this wide receiver quarterback movement, and then we got to get Faraz in here. I got to figure out what's happening fantasy-wise. So I hit Faraz, and Faraz was nice enough to make time for us here on this Wednesday. Faraz, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. You know, actually, there's a lot going on, okay? Free agency is going on. Trades are absolutely bonkers. You know what I mean? This has been one of the busiest free agency periods that I can remember.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
It's absolutely wild. For me, Kyle said in the intro there, the running back switches are just out of control. So, like, when we get to fantasy football season, that guy who just shows up with his magazine that he hasn't cracked and he's got to borrow a pen, like, that dude is done this year.
Oh yeah.
Like I don't.
Oh yeah. I
like if you're looking at this.
I'm sorry. I just saw a lot of running jokes around that thing. Like that one or those one or two guys in your league who don't study at all until it's draft day or a day before. They're gonna be like, what is going on? Like they're just gonna be drafting guys that who they do are on the completely wrong team. Yes. And it's gonna be great.
Yes.
When you look at that though, which one of these stands out, or maybe like which one of the multitude of them, how many of them stand out that are gonna be earth shattering for the team that they're going to? Because it does feel like there are so many moves, whether it's Saquon, whether it's, you know, Josh Jacobs, whatever it might be. But like, how do you put them all in perspective? Because it does feel like 8 or 9 starters, not reserves, not some dude, but 8 or 9 legitimate starters are going from one spot to another.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think Saquon is probably one of the biggest, you know, obviously. And here's the thing. DeAndre Swift was on this offense last year, but there is going to be a little bit of a shift in scheme, right? Like we have a new offensive coordinator there, right? And Saquon is going to be able to take advantage of there. He's going from one of the worst offensive lines in terms of running the football to one of the best graded, you know, rushing grades in terms of offensive line. So we're looking at a big improvement for Saquon potentially in the run game. He already had the explosiveness. We saw that last year. He was one of the most explosive running backs in the situation that he was given. So now behind a good offensive line, even without Jason Kelce, this is going to be one of the best offensive lines in the NFL, and he's going to be running behind that. Now, you know, there's still going to be the tush push. Okay. I know a lot of people think that Jason Kelce, you know, without him, they're not going to run it as much. I don't think so. I think they are going to run it just as much. But Saquon is going to get his opportunities regardless, even if it's not necessarily at the goal line all the time. I still think he's going to be able to do that. He's one of the better, you know, short yardage running backs. You know, I don't know if you could say the same about DeAndre Swift. Mm-hmm. So we might see a little bit more of him, you know, at the goal line. So, he just going to a better offense, right? That's amazing, right? Now, I look at someone like Derrick Henry, right? Gus Edwards with the Ravens last year, he tied with Raheem Mostert for the most number of goal line carries for a running back, right? And you think of Lamar Jackson, like, oh, well, Lamar's going to take a lot of those rushing attempts away. Like, not really. They don't really do that, right? And in Baltimore last year, same offensive coordinator, right? Nothing's changing there. They're going to hand the ball off to the running back when they get to the goal line. And we saw that with Gus Edwards last year. That was his only relevance. Yeah. And now you get someone like Derrick Henry, right? Who is like a touchdown machine, who's going to be getting all those opportunities on a very good offense, right? So I think Derrick Henry is, you know, again, in line for 15 plus touchdowns this year. And then you have Josh Jacobs, right? Going to Green Bay. They cut Aaron Jones. AJ Dillon's back there, but who cares? This is Josh Jacobs' backfield, right? Completely. Yep. Every down back type of situation. So, you know, he was extremely inefficient last year after his monster 2022 season. But opportunity is king in fantasy football, and he's going to get a whole lot of it.
For us, Siddiqui, Upper Hand Fantasy and Odyssey podcast. You can find it on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods. Breaking down NFL free agency. We'll do a little draft as well from that fantasy football aspect. Is there a more impactful move in terms of fantasy football this year than Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta? Because that is not only Kirk Cousins, I know he's coming off the Achilles, but it's Kirk Cousins changing teams, but you've got the impact on Kyle Pitts, the impact on Drake London, the potential impact on Bijan Robinson. Is there a more impactful move than that one?
No, there isn't, because you have to move Justin Jefferson down just a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. He's still an elite wide receiver. He's still going to be a fantasy wide receiver one, but he might not be the fantasy wide receiver one, right? Like I can't take him over CeeDee Lamb, can't take him over Tyreek Hill, but with Kirk Cousins, like that's definitely in the cards, right? Because he can easily be the wide receiver one with Cousins. Now, him going to Atlanta now, Drake London's going to be a wide receiver one this year, guys. Okay. He's going to be a fantasy wide receiver one, top 12 option. And you're going to be able to draft him outside the top 12. I don't think he is going to make his way into the top 12 in terms of your fantasy drafts. So I wouldn't be too worried about that. Kyle Pitts, he has a 1,000-yard season under his belt as a rookie. His on-target percentage in terms of catchable targets has been the worst among all tight ends over the last 2 years. Okay, so don't give up on Kyle Pitts. Okay, Kirk Cousins is one of the most accurate quarterbacks. And I think that he's going to make a resurgence this year. Also, Kyle Pitts wasn't healthy last year. He talked about it after this season. So, you know, listen, not just that, though, right? They brought in Zach Robinson from Sean McVay's system. Okay, he's going to be running bunch formations. He's going to be running a lot more 11 personnel. You know, just a better overall system than Arthur Smith was running. They're actually going to use their guys. And I think it's going to be huge for Atlanta. Not only that, though, like they brought in some underrated pieces here, right? They traded for Rondale Moore. They traded away Desmond Ridder. They brought in Rondale Moore to be their slot receiver. We know what that slot receiver can do in Sean McVay's offense, right? And they brought in Darnell Mooney from the Bears, right? Like they brought him in to be their field stretcher. So you're looking at a little bit of a, you know, nice little wide receiver trio here, plus Kyle Pitts.
Dang.
He's clearly, you know, Kirk Cousins is clearly the starter there, but then we have this weird situation in Pittsburgh where they decide to bring in Russell Wilson and then Fields as well. Just what is happening there? Because that doesn't really make a lot of sense to anybody. And like, is there going to be an honest to goodness competition here, or is this just, you know, Russell Wilson's last ride?
You know, I think Russell, like between Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, I think, you know, they have a similar deficiencies in terms of holding the ball for too long, not seeing the right read, being too late on reads, and also taking a lot of sacks, right? I think they kind of share those similarities in at least in this part of Russell Wilson's career. He didn't really have those problems early on, and they masked a lot of that in Seattle. But now, you know, this could be a situation where Justin Fields takes over at some point because Justin Fields has the ability to be dynamic, right? Like he brings a whole nother element to this. Right now, if you look at the stats, there's a lot of stats that just show that he's a middle of the road quarterback, a little bit worse than middle of the road, right? Like he's not the worst quarterback in the NFL, right? He you know, they traded for a sixth round pick that could become a fourth if they end up playing him on 51% of snaps this year, if he becomes their main guy. So I'm not ruling that out. However, I do think it's going to be Russell Wilson's job to lose. Now, I personally think that the Steelers did a good job here. I think that I know that neither of these guys, most likely neither of them are going to be their quarterback of the future. Can Justin Fields be that guy? Maybe. It's possible. Like we can see some improvement there with the right coaching and all that kind of stuff. However, I would say that they have this entire quarterback room between Russell Wilson and Justin Fields is less than $5 million from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Look at these. Look at Gardner Minshew's contract that he just signed in Vegas. You know what I'm saying? And like you look at what obviously Russell Wilson's contract, real salary is being paid by Denver right now, but still rehauling that quarterback room for less than $5 million, at least, you know, in a bridge scenario that they're in right now, I think was a pretty good move just to see what they have, see what they have in Arthur Smith, their new offensive coordinator, and kind of go from there. But I do like that move. I see what they're doing. I didn't really understand the Deontay Johnson trade, to be honest with you, because really I think they didn't get enough back for him. I know that, you know, he was not the most happiest there, but still, he's a very, very good wide receiver, and they just didn't get enough back, in my opinion.
I want to stick on the wide receiver stuff as we talk with Faraz Siddiqui, trying to get our arms around this NFL offseason from a fantasy perspective. I felt like I was taking crazy pills when there was this collective freak out about Hollywood Brown going to the Chiefs. And I understand that he's an upgrade over whatever they were lining up across from Rashee Rice last year. I fully get that and understand that. But am I wrong in thinking that Hollywood Brown is not some major needle mover at wide receiver?
Well, Hollywood Brown is definitely an above average wide receiver for sure. And I think he's closer to very good than average. And I think it's this offense very well in a certain perspective. Where Hollywood Brown excels is dig routes, out routes, intermediate level of the field. Where Rashee Rice, among all wide receivers with at least, I think it was 100 targets last season, he was dead last in average depth of target. Okay, so he was being targeted super low, and he was making a lot happen after the catch. Right now, Travis Kelce, among all receivers, this is wide receivers and tight ends now, he was somewhere around Rashee, a little above him, right? So like kind of like all the way down that list in terms of A dot, mm-hmm. average depth of target. So now you have somebody who is going to make sure that the safeties can play a little bit higher, mm-hmm. right? He's going to kind of get that intermediate part of the field going, and he's really successful on post routes. And by the way, I'm getting all this from Matt Harmon's reception perception. You got to go check that out in terms of if you're trying to figure out what wide receivers do well and where they don't do well, right? Where the success rates are. Mm-hmm. Marquise Brown, dig route, out route, post route, that's where he's super successful. And Patrick Mahomes last season was extremely successful throwing to the intermediate part of the field, which means 11 to 20 yards out, mm-hmm. right? However, he wasn't able to do it much, right? In terms of his overall attempts, he only did it, I think, it's the second or third lowest rate in the NFL. Wow. But that's where he was most efficient at that level of the field. So you brought somebody in who kind of takes advantage of Patrick Mahomes' skill set. So I do think from a schematic perspective, I do think that this is a very, very, very good ad. And I do think Hollywood Brown is going to be extremely fantasy relevant as well. I don't think it's going to take a whole lot away from Rashi Rice because he does something different. Mm-hmm. I just think this adds a new element to this offense.
But can he catch the ball?
Ooh, good question.
Well, here's the thing with Hollywood also. He is no doubt a target earner, okay? Every single year in the NFL, he's averaged, including his rookie year, above 25% target share. Okay, now last year, before Kyler got there, he was averaging about 29%. Kyler got there two games. You know, he didn't do so well. Third game, he had like 11 or 12 targets, and then he ended up having that heel injury. So, you know, not the best ending for Hollywood Brown season. But before that, you know, with not a great quarterback situation, mm-hmm. he was doing pretty well. He was doing okay. And then the year before that, when with Kyler Murray, he was a top 12 wide receiver, you know, before, you know, all that happened. So I'm bullish on this offense. And I think that this is, you know, I think one of the best weapon sets that Patrick Mahomes has had in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we've got this weird thing where all of a sudden wide receivers are getting paid. Jerry Jeudy gets a 3-year 58. Mike Williams gets a 1-year $15 million deal with the Jets to try to earn his way back in after a bad injury. But what it's doing is it feels like it's pushing up the salary of the wide receiver, even like a guy in Jeudy's case who hasn't really proven anything in the league. What does that mean for the 49ers and Brandon Ayuk? Because it seems like it's coming to a head, and this could be like a really difficult situation for the 49ers.
I don't think those contracts in particular affect him at all. I think when you're talking about the elite guys, right? He's in the conversation of, okay, what is Justin Jefferson going to get? Right? Mm-hmm. He's in that conversation, right? Like he's in the conversation of potentially being top 5 highest paid wide receivers in the NFL. Right? That's where he's looking at, right? So I think completely different ball game, completely different story. I think the 49ers, you know, they don't have to pay him. I don't think Kyle wants to pay him right now. I think he wants to get paid. Like, you know, obviously Ayuk wants to get paid, right? So I think, you know, eventually Ayuk is going to get his money one way or the other. It's going to happen. Every wide receiver who is an elite wide receiver gets paid eventually, right? As long as they don't get hurt. So is he going to get paid by the 49ers? Is it going to be a sign and trade? Is it going to be a franchise tag next year? And he ends up playing a little bit disgruntled this year. I think they're going to find a way to pay him. I don't think they're going to move on from him. I really don't, because he adds such a dynamic element to this offense where I don't think this could be a Debo Kittle type of situation, especially with, you know, someone like Brock Purdy at quarterback, who I think needs these type of weapons to really excel.
Man, it's like you were listening to the show earlier. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Faraz Siddiqui, Upper Hand Fantasy. Hey, how do you? I understand you're at the combine. You were at the Senior Bowl. How do you, as a fantasy analyst, attack analyzing the NFL draft?
You know, it's an evolving process for sure, right? Like my process kind of changes every year. You know, kind of like improve. I try to improve on every year, but you know, I'm looking at these, you know, these running backs, and I'm looking at their production. I'm looking at their efficiency. I'm looking at, you know, the stats that are relatively sticky and kind of correlate, you know, to the next level. I think, you know, one of the most overlooked, but one of the most obvious correlations is draft capital. Okay. And I think that a lot of people overlook that, right? They fall in love with players, but you have to fall in love with the draft capital as well, right? Like with running backs, you know, if they're not drafted on day one or day two, most likely you know, they're not going to be fantasy relevant. Now, you have your outliers, no doubt about it. It always happens. And it's always good to understand who is talented when it comes to those outliers, because a lot of times you can kind of pick those outliers a little bit sometimes if they're drafted fourth, fifth, sixth round. This year in particular, the running back class is weak. So we might see maybe one, maybe two in the third round, right? Like the guys that I like, you know, Jonathan Brooks, Trey Benson, like those two guys in particular, I can see them going the third round this year. I think they're good running backs. But I don't see, besides them, like, I know a lot of people think that, you know, Blake Corum is going to go to the Chargers because, you know, to reunite with Jim Harbaugh. But I don't see him going. If they take him in the third round, I think it's a reach. And he's probably going to go in on day three, in my opinion. Now, a lot of times, my opinion doesn't line up with GMs and coaches and all that, and these players end up going later or earlier. But that's kind of my process there. And the same thing with wide receivers, like first round, top 10, those guys are the guys you want to bet on, even if you're not fans of those, even if I'm not necessarily a huge fan of their game, right? I will prioritize those guys who get drafted earlier over guys who get drafted a round or two later that I like. And that's just how I roll. And especially when it comes to like dynasty, and it comes to, you know, dynasty rookie drafts and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I want to ask you about this, Faraz. Like, you've been doing this a little while, and for me, like, as I've played through the years, like, you don't usually draft rookie wide receivers. That's just like a no-no in fantasy, because rookie wide receivers, you might get a rookie that goes off for 900 yards and 7 touchdowns or something, but it's usually year 2 and year 3. It feels like over the last, like, maybe 5 years, that's gone out the window completely. And all of a sudden, wide receivers are walking into the league and putting up monstrous numbers. I mean, we talk about Rashee Rice, but Puka Nacua, you know, look at Justin Jefferson's rookie season. All of a sudden, it feels like receivers, for whatever reason, they're coming into the league, either it's better prepared or just finding success early. Have you seen that shift? And how do you attack that, especially in this year's draft, where four just studs, wide receivers that are all going to go in the first round, and they could actually make an impact.
Yeah, and I do think that the way to take advantage of this is let everybody else draft the rookies when they're being overdrafted. And just like you said, a lot of these rookies are making an impact early, but that's only been happening relatively recently. Now, the game has changed to favor the passing game. And another change that we've seen is a lot of smaller rookie wide receivers kind of doing their thing and making an impact in the league. Not something that we saw just 5 years ago, right? Where we cared about BMI and the size and that sort of thing. Then, and now we kind of have to understand that we have the Devontae Smiths and the Jordan Addisons and the Zay Flowers and all these guys who are relatively undersized, who are doing Tank Dell, ridiculously undersized. Okay. Like, this dude is small and he's just making an impact and plays like a big wide receiver. So, you know, you kind of have to understand the game is changing a little bit. And not to, and you know, what I like, if you looked at my rookie draft kit 3 years ago, it was like, hey, just avoid this guy because he's just tiny. I love his game, but he's tiny. I think I did something like that with Calvin Austin, right, who got drafted by the Steelers. I saw him at the Senior Bowl a few years ago, who absolutely destroyed everybody who lined up one-on-one against him, but he didn't make an impact in the league. Now, last year, I love Tank Dell. In my rookie, if you got my rookie draft kit last year, Tank Dell and Puka Nacua would have been on all your dynasty teams. And it's because of the fact that we've seen a little bit of a change in terms of the way these wide receivers are coming into the league. Both those guys were at the Senior Bowl. Both those guys made a huge impact. So, you know, it does play into the analysis just a little bit. But I will say, guys like Marvin Harrison, he's going to be drafted very early. You know, Malik Nabers going to be drafted early. I'm talking redraft, you know, 2024 drafts, right?
Right.
Odunze, he's going to be drafted early. So, you know, you might want to take advantage of that and maybe draft like a Ladd McConkey later on if he's in a decent landing spot. These good wide receivers who don't have the big name appeal, who could still end up making a year one production, but you can get later in drafts.
For us, Siddiqui, Upper Hand Fantasy, taking a look at this NFL offseason from the fantasy perspective. Just got about a minute left here for us. How much does a player's landing spot affect where you want to draft them in Dynasty? A rookie's landing spot, I mean.
Now, I would say that if they get paired up with a very good quarterback, then I do increase their value a little bit when it comes to wide receivers, but not when it comes to running back. Okay. If I love a receiver because of his talent and they get hooked up with a very good quarterback, mm-hmm. I will bump that receiver up. If I was sure. not a fan of that rookie's talent and he gets paired with a really good quarterback, I don't bump them up. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I depend on the talent way more, and that usually plays out also regardless of whether you have a good quarterback or not eventually, more times than not.
Right. Well, Faraz, you're the very best. Hopefully we can line up something again for this football season. I know we love chatting with you, and I know the Chatty House loves having you on as well. Upper Hand Fantasy, and you're working on a draft guide from what I understand. Where can people find that?
Yeah, Rookie Draft Kit is coming out on April 1st, upperhandfantasy.com. That's where you can find it.
UpperHandFantasy.com in about a couple, 11 days.
There it is.
Yeah. Can't wait for us. Thank you so much for hopping on, man.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate you guys.
For us, Siddiqui, Upper Hand Fantasy, it is an Odyssey original podcast. You can get that on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods. And UpperHandFantasy.com, that rookie draft kit coming out on April 1st. So make sure to check that out. He's the best.
He is awesome.
Yeah, really enjoy talking football with Faraz. I want to have him on during the summer at some point. And just be like, hey, what are you interested in? Let's talk about not fantasy football.
Yeah, because he's a cool dude.
Great dude. Really good dude.
We need to just bring him out, have him come out.
Fly him out
with us.
Odyssey will do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Odyssey will just fly him out here.
I think that's what we do.
Hop in studio.
Have a weekend. Like, I'm thinking like cigar bar and whiskey. That's what I'm thinking.
I was thinking of the radio show, but that too. Yeah. Cigar bar and whiskey as well. Yeah. Also. After the radio show.
That's right.
Let's take a look around the NBA from last night. The Kings did not get any help, alas. And one of D'Lo or KC will be in here for the handoff as well. That's coming up next on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
All right, it's time for the handoff. D'Lo and KC coming up in about 10 minutes and 15 or so right here on ESPN 1320. Kenny Caraway in the building.
Yes, sir.
Wearing that Mets hat. Got sunglasses on. You're peaking.
I mean, I'm just doing what
I feel
I
like
can.
You're peaking right now.
Just doing what I can right now. You know what I'm saying? Quiet is kept. I kind of like the Mets. I mean, I love New York City, right? So I like the Mets. I like the Yankees. I love New York City. Only New York teams I don't like, we've talked about this before, the Giants and the Jets. Other than that, I mean, I don't really care too much about the Nets, but
sure,
Knicks, Mets, Yankees, sure.
Okay, Lake Show.
I don't know. This is outrageous.
Definitely not Lake Show. And why is that on your guys'
board? I don't know who did that.
This is getting ridiculous.
It's getting ridiculous.
It sounds like Malik Monk wants to stay in Sacramento as we shift gears.
I 100% believe he absolutely wants to stay in Sacramento. Absolutely wants to stay in Sacramento. Now,
but
if somebody comes with a bag that he just can't refuse,
sure,
he may want that a little bit more. And I don't blame him. I understand that. I feel like he's going to stay as long as the Kings show him the proper respect, and however they negotiate, whether it's talking about potentially starting, talk about money, talk about future money, all this. As long as they show him respect, mm-hmm. I think he'll stay. That's what I got out of some of the things he had to say. But I can understand that San Antonio, you know, giving him.
Man.
$4 more million annually, or Orlando, or something like that. But I'm just Kenny Caraway, regular 9 to 5, mm-hmm. not a multi-millionaire. I don't have all this money or whatever the case.
Mayor of Elk Grove.
So if somebody says, I'll give you $17 million, and instead of $20 million, like 17 is just fine. That's just fine. I'm cool. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
But I know it's a different world.
Yeah.
I feel like 17 should be okay, but it's a different world. No Kadeem Hardison.
Yeah. In all honesty, like, we talked about this on the podcast a lot last night. Like, we have no idea what someone else is going to come after him with and what they're going to offer, right? Yeah. And it's not just, like, I don't think he's going to San Antonio. Like, he can go around the room and talk to guys like Trey Lyles or call his buddy Chimezie Metu and say, hey, what was your experience like in San Antonio? Would you go there, sign as a free agent? And he's going to get a big thumbs down.
You think so?
Why?
Because it's not, like, I feel like in Sacramento, Malik has been empowered to become who he is.
Mm-hmm.
That's not San Antonio Spurs basketball. You are in San Antonio, you are part of a machine and you need to play your role for sure. But individualism and stuff like that is not something that is embraced. So I would say San Antonio, no, but Toronto is a team that, again, we heard rumor that they chased him mm-hmm. as part of the Pascal Siakam deal. Toronto has a ton of cap space. I think they're at $93 million bucks in dedicated salary for next season.
Mm-hmm.
So you could see that being a spot that he could go. You could see Orlando. And for the, like, we just keep kind of going through this, but there's nothing the Kings can do. Like, they're at, without Monk on their books, they're at like $151 million bucks in salary for next mm-hmm. season. Salary cap is at like 142, 143. It might move a mm-hmm. little bit. But they're already like $9 million over. Mm. So in order for them to clear enough space to give Monk more than $17 million bucks, they've got to drop like 20, like say they want to give him $25 million a year. They have to go $25 million below the 142. So not only do they have to shave off $10 million now to get to the cap, they got to shave another 25. So you're talking $35 million dollars. That's a haircut. That's not like messing around. That's like giving away Kevin Huerter and Harrison Barnes for free
mm-hmm.
and not taking anything back.
Right.
Finding different deals. And that's nearly impossible to do, but it also, what does it do to your team to retain a player? So it's really complicated. If you're able to get Malik to sign the $17.4 million bucks for this next year, and he has to take a 2-year deal if he's on the early bird, then you can come back and pay him when he's 28 years old. You can give him a 5-year extension, right? You can pay him later, but it's whether he's willing to wait for that and mm-hmm. wait for that commitment and whether he continues to be the player he is today. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a gamble for everybody involved. So it's going to be difficult. We'll have to see what happens.
Two things about San Antonio. One, I love the idea of Chimezie Metu being like, don't go there. I was just, they didn't let me be me. I was just a cog in the system.
I would tell you, though, no, I've tried to go to them.
Sure.
To ask them about their time to write a story mm-hmm. about, you know, the Spurs when big things were happening. And they're like, yeah, no comment.
Interesting.
That also tells me San Antonio might not be the team that would offer $22 million. Like if you're going to go get a guy like Malik Monk and be like, I want to go get a guy like Malik Monk so he can conform to our system. Like, why are you, you pay him $20-something million to be Malik Monk.
This might go, like we have like a minute here. I think Victor Wembanyama upends that entire thing.
No, it's possible.
Because now all of a sudden it's like, hey, we need somebody to run pick and rolls with Victor Wembanyama or pick and pops with Victor Wembanyama. And Malik Monk is averaging 6.5 assists this year. He is exactly what we need to do that.
Go get Trae Young.
Or that.
I'm with you.
Jeremy Sochan and picks. Who says no?
he's a good, it would be a good fit for Malik.
Yeah, but to your point, James, if he's got buddies that are like, hey man, this is not, that's not it.
Well, it's not you.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah, it's not that's a bad, horrible place.
Sure.
It's not you.
Yeah, no doubt. What do you guys got coming up today?
Malik Monk, please stay. Please don't go.
Don't
there
do
it
that.
Is.
Don't do all that. I don't.
Come Malik on. Bars.
Is this a Monk Bars game?
Monk Bars.
No, the bars are. It's we'll
sing
see.
In
this
Marvin,
one ain't
just singing Marvin's Room to Malik.
Tricks all right. They all go.
All right, we gotta go. D'Lo and Casey next on ESPN 1320.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.